I like to say that there are two kinds of Buddhism. I'm not talking about Theravada and Mahayana and all that. With the Theravada Buddhists, there are two kinds of Buddhism. One I call Sansaric Buddhism. The other is Nirvanic Buddhism. Now, Sansaric Buddhism means that people are all the time talking about karma and rebirth. So they like to live in sansara. They don't like to attain nirvana. They want to be in sansara. And it is based on karma and rebirth. That means you do a lot of thing or kusala karma. That means you may be observing the five precepts or maybe giving dana and doing all kinds of meritorious deeds with the hope that you will be reborn in the heaven or in a good way in the next life. And to avoid bad karma, in order to avoid going to hell or going, it's all based on the idea of rebirth and karma. That is Sansaric Buddhism. Most people today are following that Sansaric Buddhism. Now, when we ask about Nirvana, they might say, Nirvana is simply you die and you are not born again. That is what Nirvana is. So this is why the Pope heard about this, and he had mentioned that he feels very sorry for the Buddhists, because he says that we as Christians, we are having hope. What is the hope is that we'll be going to heaven after death, and we'll have happiness and life ever after, eternal life. But these Buddhists, they want to die and die forever. That's a very pessimistic religion, because they want to, they say life is suffering, and so the best thing is to die and die forever. Now this is what the Pope said. And so when the Pope had said this, the people in Sri Lanka, they got very disturbed, and they started writing articles to the papers. And they did, so the papers, the journalists started saying that Pope has disturbed the hornet's nest. You know, there is, the hornet means that the debra. Debra kooduwak me ausala. E mokada me Sinhala ministhunta kenthi gihin bauddhinda kiyala hanne. So that time I happened to go to Sri Lanka. That was the time when I came to Sri Lanka. And then I read in the papers about this. So what I did was, I thought I should write an article. And I wrote an article. When I wrote this article, I sent it to all the papers. So all the papers published this article. And there I was trying to say that you don't have to be disturbed about this. The Pope of course, he did know Buddhism and he could have made a mistake. After all, the Pope is also fallible, I said. Fallible means that they can be wrong, make mistakes. And I said, this could also be that the Buddhists don't understand Buddhism. Because what the Pope said is correct. Because all Buddhists believe that nirvana is to die and die forever. That's what the Buddhists are thinking. So I said, there is nothing wrong with that. And then I said, the Buddha, teachings of the Buddha is not like this. Because the Buddha spoke about two extremes. One is called eternalism. Eternalism means to continue living forever. That is eternalism. And that is what the Pope was talking about. And the other extreme was called annihilationism. Annihilationism means that you die and die forever. You are annihilated. And the Buddha said, I avoid these two extremes. And avoiding these two extremes, I take the middle path. And the middle path is, first you have to get rid of this idea that you are existing, that you are a self in this world, existing as a self. And only when you have given up this illusion, the giving up that illusion is nirvana. And if you are not existing, how can you die? So if you are not existing, then you cannot die. So it is not a death here. There is no death here. There is only an illusion of existence. And if you give up the illusion of existence, all suffering comes to an end. There is no birth, old age, disease and death. That is the meaning of nirvana. So I explained that and then, of course, I said many things about it. And so when people read that whole debate came to an end. And the other thing is, I got letters from the Buddhists as well as the Catholics and the Christians congratulating me for that. And because both parties appreciated what I said. And then the Vatican organized a thing called Buddhist-Christian dialogue. They didn't have this dialogue in Sri Lanka. They had it in Taiwan. Taiwan, there is a Chinese temple called the Fo Kwan San Temple. And there they had all the facilities for a conference, a very beautiful hall with the modern facilities, with microphones and all these things. And so they invited me, they sent me a ticket to go there. So I went and I was asked to give a talk and give it in writing, my speech. So I had to read it, but I didn't really read it. I wrote the paper and I read it halfway and then I started speaking on my own. And so at the end of it, they started asking all kinds of questions. I answered all those questions. Some of the questions they thought would be difficult for me to answer, but I answered all the questions. So the important thing here is that this kind of thing happens because of this sansaric Buddhism concept. The Buddha didn't come into this world to preach sansaric Buddhism. What is called sansaric Buddhism is really Jainism, not Buddhism. Even before the Buddha, there was this Niganthanatha Putra, if you have heard that name. So Jainism, he was Jain in that sense. And this Niganthanatha Putra was able to, he was teaching this kind of teaching, sansara. And this sansaric Buddhism also has this concept of punishment and reward. Now, people who write books on this kind of Buddhism, they say karma is a law of punishment and reward. They always, this is based on the feeling of guilt or conscience. People have a thing called a conscience, where you begin to think you are wrong and feel guilty about what you do. And so there is this belief that because of that, the bad people should be punished and the good people should be rewarded. So this karma, because originally they thought about God. God is the person who punishes and rewards people. But when the idea of God as a creator disappeared, then what was left was karma that is doing that. So they thought karma is punishing and rewarding, just like God is punishing and rewarding. But that is not the meaning of karma. This is very important to understand. People, when they think in terms of karma, they are always thinking of circumstances. This is the important thing. There is the circumstance means whatever happens in the world. And this is also what is called Attaloka Dharma. Attaloka Dharma means the eight vicissitudes of life. Vicissitudes means what happens to you, like gain and loss, fame and ill fame, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. These are things that come and go in life, and these are the Attaloka Dharma, the eight things. Now, people are all the time worried about these circumstances like that. And they think, oh, when something bad happens to them, they always think, oh, this is my karma. And this is so, they are thinking of karma. And then nothing can be done about this. This is my karma. This is how they think. But this is not the teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha spoke about karma, whereas Niganthanatha Putra spoke about vipaka. His emphasis is on vipaka. That means the results or the consequences of actions. The Buddha was talking about the action part, which is the karma. This is the meaning of karmavada, not the vipakavada. Now, if you concentrate on the vipaka, what happens is you're all the time worried about your circumstances. But what the Buddha pointed out was, what is more important is not your circumstance, your attitude to circumstance. That is what it is. If you have a bad circumstance, how do you face that circumstance? How do you face that bad circumstance? Now here in the West, if you find a man whose one arm is missing or something like that, so something can be done about it. Here people even give jobs to people who are deaf and dumb and blind. Because whatever your circumstance, you can always do something about it. So it is your attitude. You can look at the circumstance in a good way or in a bad way. The way you look at it is your attitude to the circumstance. You may be born a poor person, but you can do something and become rich. So you don't have to be crying and lamenting about the fact that you are poor. That is not Buddhism. Buddhism is changing your mind. This is the important thing. This is why the first verse in the Dhammapada, what does it say? Mano pubbangama dhamma, mano setta mano mea. In simple way of saying that is, your mind is more important for you than your circumstances. How you think. This is why one of the American people wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich. If you begin to think in the proper way, you can become a rich person. So the riches depends on how you think. Now, most of you are here. You were born in Sri Lanka, but now you are here. How is that? It is your thinking. Because you have been either studying and getting qualified in your getting degrees and all that, or whatever. Or it may be simply a poor person can come here also. There are a lot of poor people who have come here. They don't have a qualification of any kind. They are doing all kinds of small jobs, like maybe working in a gas station or maybe some 7-Eleven or some place like that. And somehow they earn some money. So everything depends on how you think. And the thoughts is the prominent thing in the teaching of the Buddha. Now there is a very interesting book you should all read. This was not written by any Sri Lankan Buddhist or Thai Buddhist or any of these Buddhists. This was written by an American man, and he is now dead. He was a very intelligent person who has studied Buddhism, not just memorizing stanzas and things like that, gathas or anything like that, but he has been thinking about this. And he may have been even meditating. And he wrote this book. And the title of this book, it's a very small book. You may call it a booklet, a small book. And the name is my memory doesn't work properly. This is the thing that I it's a thing that is always in my mind.
The book.
It'll come to my mind later, I'll tell you. So in any case, this book you should all read. And it costs about $1 or $1.50 or something like that. You can buy it. It's a very small booklet. But you have different editions. You have hardcover editions which are a little more expensive and things like that. But it's not a very costly book. But when I was about 17 years, I came across this book. And I read this. And it became my meditation. Every day I read this book. And I have read that maybe 50 times or 100 times, I don't know. But I have read it so many times because it's a very inspiring book. And the whole book is written based on the first verse in the Dhammapada, Mano Pubbangama Dhamma, Mano Sitta Manomaya. That was the basis of this whole book. And if you want to know the real karma, you should read that book. All these other books written about karma and rebirth, it becomes useless when you read this book. You begin to understand the real meaning of karma. He tries to point out that the way you think is more important than everything else. It's the way you think that makes you rich or poor, even in your normal life. And this has nothing to do with rebirth. Here and now itself, if you can live a good life by changing your thinking, that's the important thing. And so the important thing is that when we begin to think that way, we are coming out of this karma and rebirth Buddhism. Because we are now thinking in terms of correcting our mind. So the important thing about the Buddha or Buddhism is the purpose of the teaching of the Buddha is to improve our mind. Now, improving the mind is the important thing. So this is why we have to understand as Buddhists what a Buddha is. Now, in order to understand what a Buddha is, I start, especially in this part of the world, I start with the concept of God. Now, God, to the Sri Lankan Buddhist, God means Devyo. The word Devyo comes, with this word Devyo, comes the idea that we are talking about some people living in the Devalokas. That is the meaning of Deva. But that is not the meaning of the word God. This is very important to understand. You see, when we speak of the word God, we have to understand that there are different forms of God. One is God with the simple G. Then there is another God with the capital G. So God with the simple G is not the same thing as God with the capital G. And there is another word, angel. Now angel simply means the inhabitants of heaven. So our Devyo, the word our Devyo is really angel, not God. That's the important thing to understand. So when we speak about Kataragama Devyo, Vishnu Devyo, these are all from this English person's point of view is just an angel. Or there are these gods which are just created by the people. That means the sun god, the moon god, the god of war, the god of love, and all these things are just mythical gods. These are all gods based on belief. People just believe. Different cultures have their own gods. Now, the Sri Lankan Buddhists have gods called Vishnu and Kataragama and all that. Where did these gods come from? They are the Hindu gods from India. You go to Thailand and ask whether they have this Katargama god and Vishnu god, they don't have these gods there. You might think there are no gods, but they have their own gods. They have different names, different gods. You go to China, they have some other gods, they are called Bodhisattvas. So these are all human beings in different cultures. They begin to believe in different kinds of gods. Now that kind of god is the god with the simple G. That's very important to understand. Now when they have this capital G god, that capital G god is a different thing. This capital G God, they say, is omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. You see, that is a different one. That means, omniscient means all-knowing. And omnibenevolent means all-good, all-loving. And omnipotent means all-powerful, right? Now, do Buddhists believe in a person like that? Buddhists have a belief like that. When Buddhists think of a person who is all-knowing and all-good and all-powerful and all, who is that? It is the Buddha. The only difference is that the Christian thinks that this all-knowing, all-powerful, all-good person is the creator of the world. But the Buddhist thinks that person is not the creator of the world, that is the human being who rises to that level. And when the human being rises to that level, he is called Buddha. So we can easily say Buddha is the god of the Buddhists. God doesn't mean he's living in heaven or something like that. That is the Christian God, or the Jewish God, or the Muslim God. Christianity, Judaism and Islam are based on one Bible. And it is that way of thinking. It's a different way of thinking. Now the Hindus also have their gods. Hindus also believe in a god called Brahma. There are really three gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. And they say that these three gods are really one. And that these are different stages. Brahma is the creator of the world, Vishnu is the preserver of the world, and Shiva is the destroyer of the world. Now that concept you have in Christianity, but with one God. Because Christians believe that the God created the world, so he becomes the creator. And then there is a god that the Christians pray to. The Christians pray to this god. And what happens is that the god that they pray to is the preserver. And then there is also the concept that one fine day God is going to destroy the world. And at the end of the world, Christ comes and sends the bad people to hell and the good people to heaven. Now, that concept, that is the destroying of the world. So, in other words, the world has a beginning and it continues and then it ends. Now, this is what in Buddhism called Uppada, Thiti and Bhanga. Uppada is the origin and Thiti is the maintenance and Bhanga is the destruction. So, in other words, somehow people begin to think of imagine. Now, the God of the Christians, the Jews and the Muslims, that God is all in their imagination. They have never seen this God. And even when Moses, he was the person who spoke about this God to the Jews. And he went up a mountain and he wanted to go and talk to God. And what he saw was a fire. There was no God there to see. What he saw was the fire. And he said, I want to see you. And he said, if you see me, you are going to die. Now, this is very important. A person who sees God, a person who sees God is going to die. So, no one wanted to die, so they didn't want to see God. So, ultimately, no one saw this God. You see, this God is all in their imagination. But they believe that he is the creator of the world. And because he is the creator of the world, he has all the powers and they are dominant there. God is the dominant figure there, the all-powerful God. Because people are really worshipping power. When they worship a God of that kind, they are worshipping power. Why do they want power? Because they feel powerless. If they are not powerless, they don't need power. It is because they don't have power. What is the power necessary for? To satisfy your desires. Why do people need power? To satisfy desires. So, if satisfying desires is the problem, then God is necessary to get power to satisfy your desire. God, you have a lot of power, please use your power and help me to satisfy my desire. That's the problem. Now, the important thing is that this is what the Buddha pointed out. What you need is not power. Your desire is not realistic. Your desire is not realistic. This is the point. Now, this is what this psychologist called Sigmund Freud, he discovered when he was trying to help these people who were neurotics and psychotics, who were mentally sick, what was the problem they had. He thought these emotions, he saw it as emotions, they are all blind. He saw that in this mind, There are two parts in the mind. One is the emotional part. The other is the rational thinking part. And this thinking part is the part that is aware of the world, the reality of the world. The feeling or emotional part is not aware of the world. Now, the small child is dominated by that emotional part, the feeling part. So the child wants various things. I want that and I want this. Now the parents, their thinking part is grown up. That is why you speak of a grown up. The grown up means not only the body, but the thinking part is developed. So when the thinking part is developed, the parent sees, no, this what you want cannot be got. Now, maybe a poor man's child may be saying, I want a car. Now, the poor man doesn't have money to buy that car. So, how can that desire be satisfied? Or a child might want ice cream or something like that. But there is no ice cream in the house. You have to go out to get the ice cream. But the child is not aware of this. I want ice cream and start crying, you see. So in a similar way, that we have in our mind two parts. And the Buddha saw this. One part is what is called chitta. The other part is what is called mano. Mano is the thinking, reasoning part. Chitta is that emotional part. So the chitta comes in conflict with mano, because the mano says no. Chitta says no, I want. Now this conflict Freud saw as the problem with all the mentally sick people. So I don't want to go into great detail about the Freudian psychology, but the important thing is to understand that it is this emotion which wants to be satisfied all the time, and not only just satisfied immediately. Immediate satisfaction is necessary. And not only immediate, permanent satisfaction is necessary. And so, as a result, we are living in an impermanent world. How can you get permanent satisfaction in the impermanent world? And the other thing is, we cannot satisfy our desires immediately. And sometimes, if I go to satisfy all my desires, I will come in conflict with other people, because other people also have desires. And then I have to fight and quarrel with people to satisfy desire, and in the process someone might even kill me, because I am troublesome. You see, so in other words, these desires cannot be satisfied. This is the problem. So, in order to understand this problem, what do you need? You need your thinking faculty, your intelligence is necessary to think. So this is why the Buddha pointed out that the important thing is not to see power. What you need is intelligence, wisdom. So what the Buddha offers is the wisdom, not power. Now this is the difference in the way the God believing means worshipping the creator or the powers, to get the powerful gods. It's not only the the Christians or the Jews or the Muslims who are doing this. Buddhists are also doing this. How are they doing this? They are going to Kataragama. They are going to Vishnu. They are going to Sai Baba. Why are they doing this? To get power. That power worship is different from wisdom worship. The Buddhist worships the Buddha for his wisdom and his goodness. And there is another thing that happened to the Christians and the Jews. Because with the growth of the human intelligence gradually through history, in the West people came to know one very important thing. That is that law called determinism. That means that everything that happens in the world happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions. In other words, the thunder, lightning, earthquakes and things like that, these are not done by gods or spirits in the world. They are all things that happen due to the presence of the necessary conditions. And when the Western people came to know about this, that was something very much after Christ, that was about the 15th or the 16th and the 17th, those centuries. And this was called the Age of Enlightenment. Now, if you read some history books in the Western history, you come across that word, the Age of Enlightenment. Now, with the coming of the Age of Enlightenment, people began to lose faith in gods and spirits and all that. Even the religious dogmas, they began to give up. Not everyone. There were people who were still attached to these ideas. But the intelligent people who were the scientists and people like that, there were also some scientists who had faith in these old dogmas. But that age was the time when people began to doubt these things. And that is called the Age of Enlightenment. But it was the Buddha in the East, long before Christ, 500 years before Christ, that the Buddha came up with this. And that was what is called the Paticca-samuppada. Paticca-samuppada means everything that arises when the necessary conditions are there. It's the same thing as determinism. And with this realization, the idea of creator, the idea of gods controlling the world disappeared. And how things happen in the world. Now, the whole modern basis of scientific technology is this. Now, in ancient times, people thought, oh, how can people go up in the air? When people, even during Leonardo da Vinci was an artist who was also a fairly scientific man, and he invented a machine to fly. And all the people started trying to kill him. So he got frightened and he drew a diagram and explained how to make this, and he buried it somewhere and thinking the world is not ready for my invention. So, but later, you know, the Wright brothers and other people started making the aeroplane, and now you know you can go to Sri Lanka if you have the money to buy a ticket and go fly. So all that is becomes possible with the growth of intelligence. And as people became more and more intelligent, they made all these different things because they had this belief in determinism, which means that everything happens due to the presence of the... In other words, this is again wisdom. So it is the wisdom that is really helping mankind to face the problems. And so the whole process of Buddhism and the teaching of the Buddha is a matter of growth and evolution of the mind. The growth and evolution. This is the important thing. We have to evolve. Now this evolution is different from the biological evolution. The Darwin's theory of evolution is the biological evolution. Now this evolution of the human man is really the evolution of the human mind. And the evolution of the human mind means really the evolution of consciousness. Because it is the human being who has become conscious of the world properly. And now people are even talking about space flights and even trying to discover the universe. But all that is an expansion of the consciousness. So the main thing is that the human being has become conscious, but not fully conscious. This is the problem. Even this process called consciousness is happening unconsciously. We don't know how we become conscious. Everything is happening unconsciously. Even our thoughts we are not able to control. Now that's why meditation is difficult. People don't like to go into meditation because they don't know how to control their mind. This is a problem. Because all mental processes are going on without our knowledge. We think we are conscious of these things, but we are not really conscious. That's the problem. The Buddha's method is to become conscious. This is the meaning of satipatthana. So, I will talk about satipatthana on a later date, but the important thing is that the thing about the Buddha is that Buddha went through an evolutionary process. That is the meaning of becoming a Buddha. And this happens not in one life. Through many lives you have to keep on practicing the paramitas in order to become a Buddha. That means you have to keep on practicing. And the whole purpose of the teaching of the Buddha is to explain to people how the Buddha can, how a person can evolve to that level. And when a person evolves to that highest point, the process of evolution stops. Why? Because this whole process of evolution, even the biological evolution, started with a mistake. What is the mistake? That is, some molecule was formed, and this molecule, different from other molecules, because it was able to absorb atoms from its surroundings and produce molecules of its own kind. But every molecule that is formed is also breaks down. So there were two processes going on, a building up process and a breaking down process. Today the building up process is called anabolism and the breaking down process is called catabolism. And both processes together is called metabolism. So that is life. Life is mainly a process of growth and evolution. Gradually, this is how evolution took place. First, it was only the formation of one molecule, but gradually, more and more molecules being formed and growth occurs. And with that comes evolution when difficult circumstances come. They had to somehow keep going. And so one important mistake was that this process was trying to become permanent in an impermanent world. Trying to become permanent in an impermanent world. Therefore, every individual had to die. Every individual dies. What remains is not the individual, but the species. So that species begins to continue. So until ultimately the evolutionary process produces the human being, and the human being begins to be able to think and reason out, and not only when the human being is able to properly understand the problem, that the human being sees the solution. And the solution is to stop this struggle for existence. So when the struggle for existence is stopped, by realizing that we are not really existing. There is only the struggle. No one really exists. And if we are not really existing, how can we die? So we don't have to worry about death. So when the human mind has evolved to that level, that person is no more a human being. He has grown above the human level. And at that level, that person becomes all-knowing, knowing everything, and all good. Because the mind gets purified with this knowledge. That means the chitta part is purified, the mano part is improved. And the understanding comes and the solution of the problem. And that becomes the real God. This is the important thing. So when we speak about God with the capital G, this is really the Buddha. Now this way of thinking is different from the theistic way. Now those who believe in God as the creator of the world is called, that kind of belief is called theism. T-H-E-I-S-M, theism. So theistic thinking. So we have monotheistic and polytheistic. Polytheistic means thinking of many gods. Monotheistic means thinking of one God. And there is another kind of thinking called atheistic thinking. Many people think Buddhism is atheistic. That is not true. Because Buddhism has a God concept, but a different one. And that is called humanistic thinking. The Buddhist thinking is not theistic or atheistic, it is humanistic. Humanistic means We are thinking in terms of the human being, and it is the human being who evolves to the level of God. So God is not an imaginary creator, but God is an actual person, a human being who rises to that level. That is a super is not only Superman. Superman is simply a human being who becomes very powerful through psychic powers. But a Buddha goes even beyond that, and his greatness is not in the power, his greatness is in the wisdom, the understanding, and solving the problem of existence, the problem of life. And that is the true God. So this is the important thing to understand, that when we talk about the Buddha, we can relate this to the idea of God. And God is not just someone living in heaven. That is an angel. God really is a person who is all-knowing, sarvajna. When we say sarvajna, it's the same thing as all-knowing, or omniscient. And we say arahang. Arahang means one who is completely purified in mind, and metta, karuna, mudita, upekha, and all these qualities are present in the arahant in perfect form. And so this goodness of the mind and the wisdom, these are the two important things. That is why we say samma sambuddho, itipiso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno. Vijja means again the knowledge, and charana means the behavior. Perfect. And sugato lokavidu. Sugato means become good. And lokavidu means understood the world. So all these things are really the qualities of the Buddha. And that is those qualities are the things that people worship today. Even the theistic religions are worshipping the same qualities. And so, this is the important thing today I wanted to speak about, but there are so many things I can say about this, so I don't have the time to go into details any longer. So we can stop here, and if you have any questions, you could ask, and I'll be happy to answer, try to answer.